Well, welcome to another exciting week of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is October 22nd, 2019.
Yes.
2 weeks to the municipal election.
Yes.
Right. Which and is always, right. always exciting.
And it's the only election for Cambridge people. I mean, for any, well, in this city.
Yeah, I mean,
there are other elections going on, but not that you vote on. There's no national or state things going on.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there are some cities and towns in Massachusetts that have municipal elections, like town meeting elections,
planning board elections. Boston, they just had a big debate thing with the at-large.
But some of them actually happen in times like in April.
Yeah.
You know,
but this isn't a special.
I think typical in Massachusetts is you have every 4 years federal elections. Mm-hmm. Every 2 years, state elections, and then and those are all in even numbered years, and then all the municipal elections are typically then in the odd numbered years.
Right.
You know, that's true for Boston. It's true for Cambridge as well. I mean, of course, in Boston, you'll have things like they have primaries leading up to their municipal elections, just to thin out the field.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I think really, I forget exactly how it works, but the thing is that they winnowed a field of at-large candidates down from, I mean, if you had, I don't know how many people run for that.
I watched the thing today on WBUR.
Right, but
there's eight running for four slots.
For four slots. So the thing is that, but if there are 12 candidates in the primary, I think the primary or the preliminary, I think they call it, is to reduce the field to maybe it's eight.
But this is not a preliminary election on November 5th. It is to elect the at-large.
Right. So in Cambridge, we don't have preliminary elections. It's just a single at-large election.
This is not preliminary even for Boston. I don't know what you're saying.
They would have already had the preliminary. Sometimes they don't need to have it because there's not enough candidates.
Okay. All right.
You know, for example, if it's a mayoral election year, I think they do a preliminary and then they reduce it to like the top two and then they go
head to head. So you're talking about all of the council seats, not just the at large.
Yeah.
Because this is just an at large.
Right.
I don't know why.
Cambridge, because we use ranked choice balloting, the thing is that there's really never been a need since 1941 to have a preliminary or primary election at all. I guess you'd have to call it a preliminary election. Primaries are really for primaries for partisan elections, and Cambridge has always had nonpartisan elections.
Well, what's interesting about this one is that I guess at large, it's a whole different thing than we have, because at large is a more powerful position, I guess, in the Boston system.
Actually,
Ianna Pressley was an at large.
No, but the way it works in Boston is that there are, I forget exactly how many seats there are on the Boston City Council. But let's just pretend for the moment and say there were nine, okay?
Yeah.
And then there are four at-large seats.
Yeah.
So the thing is, you're electing within districts for specific district councillors.
But in at-large, you have a lot more clout.
I don't know that you have it. The same number of votes.
So why are there two incumbents going for at-large that have been on the council?
I think
Michelle Wu, who's a big
partly. I'm gonna guess.
I think you're wrong.
Okay, there's a strategic reason why you might do it. Mm. One is that if you're going to run for an at-large seat, you're then running citywide, and if you have aspirations to become mayor or anything,
you want to be citywide recognized.
Right.
So I guess that's what it is.
So I think that would be at least part of the reason.
And Michael Fougherty, who did run for mayor, is going for an at-large seat. He's not on the council.
Right. So, or is he?
Wait a minute.
I mean, I think I think some of the district councilors in Boston have a little bit of, not really patronage, but they have a little bit of control over the delivery of some services that we don't really have that system.
Well,
in
but some people would argue with our PR and that you only need 1,500 votes, you concentrate on like where you're from and you might get those votes. I mean, in some ways, there's a little bit of a similarity.
I think the mechanics of
East
PR.
East Cambridge, Tim Toomey.
PR elections are kind of, it's a kind of, more by tradition than design, it's kind of a hybrid. We don't have districts, but the thing is you can run your campaign like Tim Toomey often does out of a single neighborhood.
Or some of the North Cambridge.
West Cambridge, whether
Arbor
it was Tom
Square.
Danahy. Yeah. Danny Clinton used to run out of Cambridgeport.
Yeah.
Right? So there were some candidates.
I still think that's done a little bit.
Largely neighborhood based. It used to be the old, it was what was typically true back in the days of the Cambridge Civic Association and the Independents, which was sort of the other side of the political coin, it was typical that independent candidates ran more neighborhood-based campaigns.
Yeah.
So Tim Toomey or Alvalucci before him would have been an independent running largely out of East Cambridge. Mm. Tom Danny, a North Cambridge independent. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with Danny Clinton for Cambridgeport. Cambridge Civic Association candidates typically were more issue-based.
Yeah, which is kind of where it is at this point now, because we have bike lane, we have tree canopy, which kind of encompasses the whole city. Yeah,
we have this sort of hysterical mishmash of
yeah.
Of
issues. Because you're both still neighborhood people that will call their who they think is their representative, you know.
Yeah, and it's and actually that's very effective because I think every candidate really should have at least something of a neighborhood base to work from.
Well, yeah, those are guaranteed votes.
It's a very tall order to get elected without having some sort of neighborhood base.
No, you have to have some grounding of somewhere. Yeah.
You know, and you know, the exception is if you have an election where it's totally driven by issues, then maybe you can be a completely issue-based candidate. So I don't think in the days of Billy Walsh, when he was railing against rent control, I don't think he was doing so because he was, you know, based on, you know, his political support around Hurlbut Street.
No.
He was
I think candidates are successful, I think, have both.
I think it's a much easier road hoe if you've got a neighborhood base to begin from and then issues and demographics.
Yep.
That basically to support it. Some people are elected in part, at least, by racial, religious, or other identity. So it's not all issues, and it's not all neighborhoods, you know. And it's up to the voters pretty much to choose their own district, and it doesn't have to be geographical. Yeah.
So speaking of elections, I should mention I went to Did you watch it? The one that was on Thursday night. You went to Wednesday night. The Mid-Cambridge.
I went to the Mid-Cambridge.
And I went to Thursday at Leslie, which was the Porter Square neighborhood.
And
plus,
I couldn't go to that because I was teaching. Yeah.
And to just prove people do watch this, because Nicola Williams came out to me to just say hello. And then Derek Copan.
Right.
And he was very nice, and he said something that I had said. You said that I was extreme. And I said, I did? And I don't, you know, I don't remember things I say. I said,
you said he was extremely marvelous, right?
I don't know. So I said I would say something today. I mean, I meant to look further at his stuff, but I think it's probably because I don't agree with everything. But I'm sorry if I offended him. But
I get a lot of emails and other messages from various candidates. By the way, this morning, I finally, I'm getting the updates for candidate pages.
Well, you had said that,
Yeah, and so this morning before I headed off to work, I put in new content on, I think, 4 city council pages.
Good.
Rattled them off. New pictures for several candidates as well. So I think, you know, with 2 weeks to go, candidates are kind of making sure they're leaving no stone unturned.
Oh, so you did get something from him.
Yeah, so and actually...
Is it reference to what I said?
I mean, I get little campaign updates from a lot of the candidates.
Yeah, but this one in particular...
It actually was Derek Copan gave a really, really nice, concise understanding your transferable vote. You know, it's kind of nice when you have another scientist in the pack.
That's true.
I mean, he's an astronomer, right? But the thing is that he gave it to all of his supporters, like, this is how you should think about it. And even if I don't win, you know, make sure you vote for other people. I've recommended a lot of other candidates and make sure that, you know, you vote deep and do that, you know. So, I mean, slates do that. You know, that's kind of part of the whole psychology of slates. But also good candidates really should say, please give me a number one vote. But don't stop there, you know. It's not going to hurt me to have you vote for people who might benefit from your vote should I not be elected.
Yeah.
You know, so he did a good job of.
He did say that the Sierra Club had not endorsed him, and I said, "Oh, well, in my book, that might be in your favor because I don't necessarily go along with just because the Sierra Club endorses you that everything is
you
crazy."
Know,
you know, and I don't always agree with everything.
One of the points that I continually make to people,
and
I've got it posted on websites and elsewhere.
Yeah,
and I think it's just true is that people, you know, even if there's some, you know, the problem is not everybody in a city like Cambridge has the time or desire to be following everything that's going on in town.
Yeah,
the old days of the Cambridge Civic Association, people.
I would say only about 20%, if that.
It's pretty low. Yeah, so in the days of the Cambridge Civic Association, people were somewhat reliant on them to give them the advice. You know, the so-called good housekeeping seal
like
of approval.
Like, who likes you? Who endorsed you?
Who are the good government candidates, right? Mm. You know, and then you maybe, when you know what their slate is, you sort of, then you maybe pick and choose amongst the slate people who you think is the best, based on whatever criteria you choose. But the truth is that, you know, in the days of CCA, you might have 13 or 14 or 20 people who are really making those decisions. Nowadays, when the current crop of slates, there's really kind of four of them, plus some of these endorsing organizations like Sierra Club, and then Mass Voters for Animals or something like that. There's a whole bunch of them.
Our Revolution. They're
trying to present themselves as though they're a legitimate slate. Mothers Out Front. Do they endorse candidates? I don't know if they do.
Well, they hold forums,
but you know, there's always
that's
this.
That's a good point.
You've got to be a little
careful
if you're a 501c3 non-political organization.
Oh.
You can be an advocacy one, but the thing is, there are certain restrictions on how political you want to be. And also, if you get too political, people just think of you as just too political, too.
Is the Sierra Club not a 501?
I think they are, but I think what often happens, you have kind of a little side branch.
That enables you to do candidate endorsements. Well, I know Planned Parenthood does that, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, but the thing to keep in mind about candidate endorsements is it's good to sort of maybe, you know, they may be informative, but I don't think that I can fairly say that there's a single endorsing slate-making organization in Cambridge where the people who are actually making the decisions are more than about that many people.
Yeah.
You know, it really is just the advice of a handful of people. Mm. And maybe those are people who are, you know, breathe in the same political air as you, in which case, you know, trust them. Go with it, right? And sometimes they do a little colluding as well. So you'll have, for example, the Residents Alliance and the Our Revolution slates differ by maybe one person because it's the same people who are involved in both. Mm. You know, and then it makes it look like a multiple organizations doing endorsements when it's not really true that way. There's this kind of spawning of political or civic/political organizations in Cambridge. I think when the Residents Alliance was formed maybe six plus years ago, with a kind of a, you know, slow down or stop development kind of stance. That's what spawned the creation of a Better Cambridge, which didn't even have a name initially, just pretty much they were...
The YIMBYs, yeah.
Well, no, the YIMBY wasn't even part of it
initially. No, but if you had to just differentiate, they sort of
got swept up in that somewhere along the road.
Yeah, well, they went to a...
I mean, initially I understood them to be more supportive of transit-oriented development.
Yeah.
So in other words, if one group wanted to downzone parking lots in Central Square so that you could never build housing, the precursor of a Better Cambridge came in saying, no, we think you should build housing on those parking lots. So it was kind of, that was the contrast.
Which is what a lot of people on actually the rest are saying now,
right.
build on the parking lot.
But those organizations initially weren't really there fielding candidates or forming slates. They may have held forums or whatever, but in time, that's really what it became. They're kind of like staking out positions on opposite sides of a line that I don't even understand.
When Nadeem Mazem ran, I think that's where
when
he
first
saw
ran,
the more,
there was a group of three.
Prominence of slates.
Yeah, and
right?
that kind of reintroduced the slate dynamics into Cambridge after probably an absence of about 12 or 14 years.
I think that's it.
And, and it had a marginal effect, I think, in that first go-round. But even, you know, in close elections, a marginal effect might make the difference between winning and losing. So, so that's kind of the way it is. So we're really just inundated by slates now. What are the four? There's the Residents Alliance, the Our Revolution Cambridge. I guess we could do that.
Go ahead.
Right? Residents Alliance, Our Revolution Cambridge, A Better Cambridge, and now... The newest kid on the block is the Cambridge Citizens Coalition, right? And there's some people who are endorsed by multiples.
Patty Nolan, she's
on three or four.
Yeah, but particularly he's on the A Better Cambridge as well as these two, which is
right.
interesting.
Right, so he's on three of four.
And Risa Mednick is on.
Yeah, so there's several who are on three of four.
Right.
But the thing is, the fact that you're endorsed by or on the slate of three of four of the possible slates doesn't mean you're necessarily sort of the person with the great advantage on any one of them. I think it's fair to say that, you know, in this election, if slates or no slates, that incumbents still have the, you know, the greatest strength. So if you have a slate that has incumbents and non-incumbents, typically it becomes kind of a an incumbency protection device. Mm. So basically you've got the people who are likely to win, which is incumbents, let's face it, and then other candidates, some of whom basically their job, whether they know it or not, is to be defeated and have your votes transfer to support the rest of the slate. And then if you've got enough support citywide, maybe you can pick up an extra seat, in which case one of the people who might otherwise be feeding incumbents will become an incumbent 2 years from now by winning an election. So that can happen. It might happen. Actually, very good chance that'll happen this year because there's one open seat and this...
Yeah, but I have a feeling there's a lot of... Because if you look at these, three of these slates are kind of in alignment a little bit because they're all against the AHO. You know, Our Revolution, you know, but, Cambridge Residents, and Cambridge Citizens Coalition.
You know, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the A Better Cambridge group is largely defined by their allegiance to that issue.
Yeah, but I would say this election has been... I mean,
And I'd say the Cambridge Citizen Coalition group are largely definable by their not being in favor of that. But all of the candidates on both slates, by the way, do have other attributes besides just how they feel about that one issue.
Especially Simple Siddiqui, who sort of got dissed by a few people there.
Right, and I think that's actually a significant thing, is that...
Right, just because of her courthouse.
You know, and that's one of those things where if you've got sort of a kingmaker like Representative Connolly, who's affiliated himself very tightly with Our Revolution and also has a rather interesting, tight relationship with the Residence Alliance, pretty much lays down the law and says, well, you know, you... Anybody who votes in support of resolving the courthouse issue, and by resolving I mean allowing it to proceed some form or other, is somehow, you know, the bad guy. So Sumble got beat up unfairly.
Even though she takes no money from developers.
Right. So
you
she
know,
took just, a yeah, she took a hard a vote. And she honestly, did. I respect people that take hard votes.
Yeah.
You know, even when it's votes I disagree with.
It wasn't
with,
a safe vote where I would... say, and I won't say names, some count have taken a safe vote by on the age anyway. So
And she didn't, they didn't punt it, they didn't kick it down the road, they didn't table the issue, they just voted, you know. So there is a certain amount of political courage associated with that, I think, should be rewarded by voters. So anyway, so it's 2 weeks from now, and it'll be interesting.
And there's a lot more forums if you go to Robert's site. And
There's
one tonight at, I'm not, it's at Ward 9. It's up at the Youth Center on Urine Avenue. That's not my hood.
Ward 9 is actually one of the votingest wards in the city.
Oh, boy, that's going to be packed with.
Well, I don't know if
are
it'll
you
be
gonna
packed. No, I'm not going to go.
There's a planning board meeting, which is important, a good tonight too. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
River Street Working Group, but that's different.
You know, it was busy. I had about five. If I could have just cloned myself, I could have been in five places at once.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, and I'll probably say this again next week, is that don't forget how to vote in a PR ballot. And it has nothing to do with who you're voting for, but it basically, what we tell people is simply this, is that make a list of the people you find acceptable. And then make a separate list of the ones you don't find acceptable. Do not vote for the people you don't find acceptable.
And no more than 15, because that's kind
right.
of...
Right, and so that'll help you in the decision, because you can only vote
There's
for up to 15 on the council ballot.
Yeah.
But the thing is that if you really don't like some candidate, if you've got strong feelings about it, don't list them at all. Because if you list them, your ballot might end up helping to elect them, right? And then once you've decided on the people you find to be acceptable, and that may be informed by the presence on a slate or not, I would hope that you would use criteria other like Cambridge candidate pages or other criteria to decide who the good guys are.
Right.
And then once you've decided on that list, and that list can be anywhere from 1 to 15 people. There's no rule about that. You know, some people, I think a typical ballot is probably in the order of about 5 or 6 people being voted. I usually vote more than 10. Some people only vote one, but that's not
a
good idea.
Can I ask you, on the ballot, now you...
But rank the ones you like.
There's columns, right? One, and it says 1, 2, 3 on the top?
Yeah, so the thing
so you're
is
you're only supposed to do an X. You're not supposed to put one in that box, right?
You fill in the oval. There's, don't
do
X's. You fill in the oval. So,
okay.
So you'll see on the ballot, you'll see
it'll
the names going down. I wish we had a sample ballot here.
Yeah.
But you'll, the
maybe
names will go
week.
Down here, and then you'll have ovals for rank 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 going
yeah.
across. So you just fill in the ballot, you know, your one
yeah.
for your top choice, slide to the right,
yeah.
two for your second, slide to the right,
yeah.
three for your
and
third.
And the ballots are randomly, not the same name is not going to be on the top.
So they have
what really
always called the barrel roll, which is
right.
that in principle, they sequentially
mm-hmm.
pass them so that more or less
yeah.
Every candidate will
gets
be at
to
the
be
top
number,
of approximately
yeah.
the same number of ballots. The one exception
right.
being absentee ballots. Which are purely alphabetical from A to Z.
Oh, that's interesting.
So there's a you know a little bit of a bias that way.
Interesting.
One, there is a phenomenon we have noticed over the years, which is that you know we even did a little statistical analysis of it, me and another person, that shows that after you make your first choice,
mm-hmm.
maybe your second choice, but if you've got another list, a lot of people just vote them alphabetically afterwards, but you really shouldn't do that.
What do you mean alphabetically?
Meaning, if you like Jones number one and Maloney number two, and then your other candidates are begin with N and P and Q,
that's crazy.
They'll give 3, 4, 5, whatever.
That's crazy.
Because they don't care about the ones after
their
first few.
Well, then don't vote
at all. Well, I would just say give a little bit of thought. Mm. It's not that hard to sort of rank them. And it's probably true that you're saying, well, should I give this person a 5 or a 6? Or which order should I? Okay, if it gets to that, don't worry about it, right? But your vote, 70% or so of ballots basically stick with their number one choice. So that's your most important vote by far.
Yeah.
But if your candidate doesn't win, then your ballot may have an extra life.
Yeah.
Or if your candidate wins big, you may
surplus,
be part of the
yeah.
surplus that goes to other candidates.
And
as
also,
well.
Please don't forget, there is a school committee election.
Very important.
Because there's always a drop-off in how many people don't cast those ballots, right?
That's right. There are a fair number of ballots that are cast
because,
blank
Because, you know,
for
if you're young,
committee.
Single, you don't really... But there's 3 open seats, so it's pretty contested.
Right.
And I would... there's forums you can look at. There's
and,
a couple
And there's candidate
down.
Pages. The thing is that you
pages,
can at least
yeah.
get a good first impression.
This is an important...
For
body.
All of
yeah.
those candidates. And
yeah.
if you want to vote just on first impressions, go right ahead,
yeah.
you know. But don't blanket, you know. It's
yeah.
it's a waste of time to blanket, you
yeah.
know.
At least spend a little bit of time to understand what those
Right, and for the school
yeah.
committee, there are 3 out of 6 seats are going to be
that.
Vacant.
I said that.
So I would rather not see the 3 seats filled randomly
right.
by people just
it's
voting
important.
Randomly.
Yeah.
So think about it. You know, it's mm-hmm. your duty as a citizen. Think about
yeah.
it. It's
think
not, it's
about
not
it.
That hard. So anyway, so we are definitely in the home stretch, and you're definitely getting that feel.
You said it's 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks from today, Cambridge voters, you're about to get inundated by a lot of paper in the mail.
I mean, what are those costs? The 8x10s? Because I've gotten a couple.
I
of
don't
those.
Know, but you know the. Yeah, I really don't know. A different
and mail, not just, you know, you can put them on your doorstep. You're not supposed to put them in your mail slot, which is different than mailing
yeah.
it.
You know, I mean, I've been carefully tracking all the how much money candidates raise, to some degree
yeah.
how much they spend. But the thing is the biggest amount of expense happens in the last week or so of the election.
It's the marketing. It's like,
it's
yeah.
the mailing. The mailing.
I haven't gotten any,
huge.
Well, you know, I don't really listen to
You're
my
not
landline.
Getting,
is that gone?
I haven't
People
gotten
don't do
a
that anymore?
Single robocall yet.
And you actually use your landline.
And
I mean,
I
have one,
yeah.
but I don't, I never.
Landline. Hmm. Oh, the
yeah.
phone. That's right.
It
the
just,
phone.
I never get any messages
yeah.
on it. So I think if it's a robocall, they can't leave a message,
yeah.
right?
And but my understanding is yeah. that robocalling is relatively inexpensive for candidates. So
I know. I get a lot,
so,
but I guess because of my change.
Yeah, so
I don't
you're
going to
get,
it.
You people will probably get a fair
but
number.
But not
of
the
those.
Young people, because I don't think you can do it on a cell phone, can you?
Unless somebody harvested those numbers from various sources.
True.
You know, people who pay money to some of the political
yeah.
parties, they have this
That's true.
Voter activation network software there where they go through great lengths to actually pair up phone numbers with.
Well, especially if it's your only phone, as such young people, it's probably written down somewhere with some other information you provided somewhere.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that is your phone.
But
yeah.
you're going to get hit hard pretty soon. And one thing I really, you know, my personal urging here is that, you know, there are some candidates who got more money than you can imagine to spend. And you got other candidates who basically have relatively small budgets. And just because somebody's got a lot of money to spend doesn't mean they're necessarily the best candidate. So, the internets is actually a great, can potentially be a great equalizer here. So the thing is that, you know, accessing information online about candidates is
true,
free.
But that's the whole other issue.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you can't really fact check a lot of stuff.
You can't
online.
Fact check too much. It's true. And people will present
Their best selves aspirational.
For example, if somebody decides that how one stands on that affordable housing overlay would either help them or hurt them politically, they may choose to suppress that in their literature or even on their candidate page and not even mention it. All right, so you have to do a little bit of research to understand where candidates really stand because they're trying to, you know, it's politics, right? You don't put your worst foot forward. You try and put the one that's going to score you the most points, you know? So it's not always easy being a voter, but at least the information is available.
I have to say, if people are willing to go to coffees or give coffees, a lot of people say that is the best way to, because you really do get to know who that person is.
You really do.
Because you see them face to face, it's personal, there's only maybe 20 people in the room or something. And, I mean, forums, you know what my big gripe about the forums, and I know is that there's never any audience participation.
Yeah.
There used to be. I seem to remember there was ones that at least they'd pass out questions and then they, and I just feel like, who needs that? I can just watch it on TV.
I was on a panel last night. Kind of an interesting one. It was a group called the Cambridge Club. Maybe I'll say a few more words about it shortly. But the thing is that at one point I made is that unlike back in the days when I was a candidate, where at every forum, almost every candidate was at the forum.
Yeah.
This year has been very weird in that there have been multiple forums
been a few
where
they came late or they just didn't show up. I'll mention that in the next segment because I know who didn't show up at all and didn't give any excuse.
Right, but some of the candidate forums where people already decide, well, they don't like me anyway, so I'm not even going to show up, and then you had really
low... Yeah, but if you were invited, you should at least say I'm not coming.
I agree with that. So anyway, we're back in a couple of minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay.